History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. And what we've learned, of course, is that they don't have to go untold as long as we're willing to take that initiative to ask a few questions and then invest enough time to listen patiently as memories from long ago take on new meaning in the here and now. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we find ourselves inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Next week, we're going to hear a story unlike any other we've heard on Hometown Heroes from a member of the Dutch Resistance during World War II, but I'm saving that for next time because of a convergence of factors I didn't want to miss the chance to highlight this weekend. We told you a while back about the idea of taking World War II veterans' interviews you've heard here on Hometown Heroes and turning them into a dramatized audio podcast with voice actors and audio production. That effort is getting closer to reality now. Retold World War II was featured at an industry convention called SonicCon this week in Virginia, and the concept was very warmly received. So keep your eyes and ears peeled for that, and if that's something you'd like to help make a reality, let us know. We can brainstorm. You can follow Retold World War II on Facebook and Instagram, and you can find links at hometownheroesradio.com. When that idea does become reality, perhaps some episodes might be devoted to experiences in an often overlooked battle in the Pacific that marks its 80th anniversary this week. We're going to be exploring that today. 35,000 Americans, about half of them Marines, converged on a tiny little atoll in the Gilbert Islands 80 years ago this week. More than 1,000 of those Marines would give their lives on that one square mile of terrain. More than 2,000 more wounded in a battle that lasted less than 4 days. You may have heard it pronounced Tarawa or Tarawa. The Japanese pronunciation was Tarawa. Those young Americans fighting there had never heard of it before, but would never forget it after. Many of them were teenagers, like Jack Venables, who had lied about his age and joined the Marines at just 15 years old.
I was told by the recruiting sergeant that he would be able to put me in the same outfit that my brother was in. And I said, well, I'm not quite 17. He said, don't worry about it. He said, I'll tell you where you can use as a birthplace because the Hall of Records is burned down. They can't prove or disprove your age. So I went in at age 15, as did my brother. We were 13 months apart. I was the younger one of the two.
And you know, I've had other veterans tell me that they lied about their age or they got their parents to sign for them or this or that. But I haven't had anyone tell me that he was able to find a loophole of a small town in Texas where the Hall of Records had burnt down. I guess there's no way to count how many people did this, but it sounds like this was a fairly common thing with that particular Marine Corps recruiter that he pointed people to fill it out this way and you'll get in?
I think so with young people, of course, younger than legal age for the military.
And what was that town in Texas?
Farwell. And it's interesting because when I was overseas and I was in a hospital due to malaria, it's a field hospital, it was in a tent actually, and some guy was yelling, hey Tex, hey Tex, and it was one of the corpsmen. I didn't realize he was calling me. And until I finally turned around and realized it was trying to get a hold of me. So anyway, it was kind of funny at the time.
So you'd never even set foot in Texas, and here you are listed that way. And what possessed you, 15 years old, to want to go fight a war? Where did that come from?
Stupidity.
Had you known, huh?
Had I known. No, I'm kidding. I don't know why. I wanted to be with my brother, mainly. We grew up together, and we were real good friends. We were at the island right next to the main island of Tarawa. Now, that was atoll. Gilbert Islands is what they were called. And so Tarawa was the main thrust of the battle, and that's where they were dug in so well, it's unbelievable. They had built bunkers, and they were difficult. The only way we were able to get them out was with a flamethrower, for the most part, or throwing hand grenades in there.
And your brother was part of that main landing force?
I thought he was. Another friend of mine and I went looking for him, and when the tide's out, you can walk between the islands, which we were doing. We had our rifles and well prepared in case we ran into some Japanese. But we'd ask about the six Marines as we'd see different people. Have you seen them? Yeah, they just passed not long ago. And so we kept going and going, and it was hot as heck. And finally, the tide started coming in, and my buddy said, well, we've got to go back, and we're not going to find him. And so we did. We started going back. No, the tide was coming in, and so pretty soon it's up to our ankles and then up to our knees. By the time we got to the island right next to Tarawa, almost, well, it was at our chest height, and we had our rifles held above our heads trying to get back to the island, and Amtrak came by with a bunch of other Marines in it. And they laughing like heck. I should say laughing like hell. That's what they were doing. And they plucked us out of the water and took us back to the main island.
In the years since, when you have read about that battle and you see the number of casualties, you realize how bad it was for so many. Has that added to your perspective of what you were a part of there? How significant that chapter of the World War II history was?
It's interesting because before we landed, we were still aboard ship and they were bringing back casualties, all shot up. And I'll tell you, that isn't spooky. Knowing that we're going to go in, fortunately we didn't land on the main island, but there were bodies floating on the water by the time we got in. So it was terrible.
That was Jack Venables. He and his older brother were two of the teenage Marines who survived the Battle of Tarawa 80 years ago this week. Another was Bob Andre, who had quit school after his mother passed away when he was just 15.
I was lucky I didn't go in the first wave. And so that they're the ones who the brains-to-be miscalculated the tide. And they went in. It was not shallow, low tide. It was high tide. And then they were, when they jumped off the Amtraks or whatever we had going in, they were caught right in front of the machine because the machine guns were about 8 feet in a wall that we didn't have much land to land on, only about 8 feet. Then there's a wall, and the machine guns were right there going into it.
So if you had been in the first wave, you probably wouldn't be sitting here talking to me.
Yeah, they got the bulk of it, and the ones that were wounded end up dying during the night. All night long, they're calling for help, help, but nobody could get to them. And slowly you hear the help, 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 just fade away because the Japs were out on the pier, which was their toilet. And how they determined how many Japs were on the island, they took an aerial view of the toilets, figured how many used the toilets, and that's how many Japs they figured was on the island, how they calculated it. So the next morning, we over the wall, and then we were just going from coconut tree to coconut tree or body to body, whatever was any protection, you know.
Well, and that was my question when you got there. And here you're, you're 17 years old?
Yes, yeah.
17-year-old, never been in combat before. What did you see and hear and experience when you first got on that island?
Well, the thing we were doing is trying to get there because we were told to get there. And as far as thinking, I wasn't thinking at all. I was just doing what I was told.
What did you see?
Well, just bodies all over the place, and we would stay as low as possible to keep from getting hit.
And were they able to get you all the way to shore, or were you guys hung up on the reef too and you had to wade in?
No, we went in rubber boats. Okay. Yeah, so we were able to get in. We got a lot of bullets in the rubber boats, but they were with so many compartments that it didn't sink. Yeah.
So you're 17 years old. You're coming ashore with dead American bodies all over the place and bullets flying your way. Yeah. Were you scared?
I didn't have time to think about that. I really didn't. And plus, being 17 and young, you didn't know what the hell was going on.
Something tells me that must have been a pretty long day for you.
Well, it sure was. It started at dark, early in the morning, aboard the ship, mm-hmm. loading up, going over the cargo nets on the ship. No, it was a long day. But when you don't get hurt, you don't think much of it.
But I'm sure some stuff came pretty close to you.
Oh, yeah, all around us. Yeah, sure. They're bouncing off everything. You don't think anything about it. I didn't. I was just doing what I was told, is getting from point A to point B without getting shot.
So you spent that whole time following these machine guns and keeping the ammunition supply going?
Staying in my position, stay where I belonged, yeah.
How'd you sleep that first night?
I didn't, because they put me out on a point. This a lot of people don't know about, but they called me and he said, go out about 10, 20 feet out there. Well, turns out when I went out about 10 or 20 feet, there were Japs there. I can hear them talking. And then he finally realized what they had done. They called me back. I crawled out and I crawled back. Yeah, because you could hear him jabbering over there. Yeah.
How close do you think you were to him?
Here to her.
10 feet.
Yeah, easy. Uh-huh. Easy. But I've been closer.
Well, you're teasing us now. I'm sure there's more to come in this story here.
That's another battle.
Well, we'll get to it, I'm sure, as long as you're willing. So how long were you there? And I say an island, really. This is an atoll, a few different strips of land kind of in a collection.
That was on Bito. It was the name of the island itself. That's where all the fighting took place. Now, some of the Japs left to the other islands, and they're a horseshoe shape. After 78 hours or so, then we start cleaning up the bodies of our boys. Then they told us we had to load up on the Amtrak. We were going to the other islands because the ones that are left are on the other islands running away, going around. And we went from island to island, which was we waded across. They're low tide, you can wade across from island to island. But we went about, six or seven islands, and then they replaced us. They brought other outfit in to relieve us, and we went back to the ship. And from there, we went back to Hawaii.
Well, and you say that, you know, you guys had to clean up the dead American bodies. That had to be hard, especially for a 17-year-old. How do you handle something like that?
Well, 17, you really don't know much about life. So, again, I was told to, I went with a minister, preacher, what was it? A priest or something, to go around. He would take their rings and watch off and search their pockets and then take them back to the tent at nighttime, and he'd go through them and clean out anything that shouldn't be in the wallet and stuff like that. Then at that time, we would have a stretcher or a litter or whatever, and we'd load the body on there and take it to the airstrip. And let the airstrip, we had 7 or 8 or 10 of them, something like that. The first one was a Navajo Indian. He was behind a stump of a coconut tree, and he was shot right through the radio and right through the head.
Yeah. Did you lose any of your friends there?
Oh, yeah. Egghead Epperson, he was killed. Matter of fact, he was awarded the Medal of Honor. He was from our squad, yeah.
What had he done that they gave him that award posthumously?
Well, he was in foxhole, and Japs were throwing hand grenades at him. He pulled them underneath him. Even though their hand grenades weren't very powerful, but they did the job. They killed him.
So he sacrificed his own life to save others?
Yeah, two other guys in a hole with him.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people have referred to your actions in World War II as heroic, and we're going to hear more about what you did. But just hearing you tell me that story about Epperson, sounds like he's someone who you might have seen as a hero.
Well, absolutely. He had a head shaped like an egg. It was, we all nicknamed him Egghead. I was Prune Picker because I was California. And they named a ship after him, a couple of them. Had it for so many years, and they gave it to some foreign country and sold it. And they built another one, named it after him, yeah. But that was about the end of that battle. That didn't last that long.
Yeah, it was quick, but it was devastating. It was bloody. It was deadly.
Oh, yeah. You ask about sleeping. I don't know if anybody else slept. I sure as hell didn't. Whatever I got was lucky.
Well, and I hear you talk about other guys who died there. And I have to wonder if there were moments in a foxhole or behind a stump or even while you're carrying a body on a litter where you maybe wondered, am I next? How long am I going to last out here?
No, you just try to... I really did. I don't remember thinking that way. I'm sure I was afraid or scared, but as far as thinking about it, I never really thought about it. Again, I go back to my age. Just don't think about it. I wasn't any kind of hero or anything like that. I just... nothing registered.
A glimpse into the mindset of those Marines on Tarawa 80 years ago this week. Bob Andre would go on to earn the Silver Star on Saipan less than a year later. He was wounded there as well. You can link to his complete original interview at hometownheroesradio.com. And when this special episode continues, more memories of the brutal combat conditions on Tarawa, plus the view from a veteran who had to deliver those Marines to that horrific scene, and one who was sent there to document what was happening. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. Hey, do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for way too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I gotta tell you, when it comes to your money, I think I've found a better way with EECU. Just take a look at myeecu.org and I think you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a not-for-profit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Over 350,000 members now in 12 different California counties and access to more than 30,000 co-op ATMs and free online and mobile banking. What I love most is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. A decade ago, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. By the end of this year, more than 1,800 veterans will have seen their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement that EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 1-800-538-3328.